This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs.
Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well.
Hello, friends. This is episode number 35 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
And I'm Chris.
And Katie is out tonight. She is recovering from the two PPTQ top eights that she racked up this past weekend.
Girl.
Congratulations to her. I know she was a little down on herself for not winning them, but I'm proud of her because I can't even top 16 those things. So very happy for her, and I hope she enjoys the week off. But in her place, we have a very special guest with us. We are all a big fan of hers. She describes herself as being a fast-talking dame who enjoys gardening, painting, and participating in legislative advocacy. She is our friend Haley Gentile. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, did I say your name right?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Surprisingly.
I just wanted to make sure. I think Hallie might have mentioned that you were our Woman of Excellence once, or I think we talked about you on the show.
Yeah, Mike gave me a heads up when that happened.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure, because when I see your name, I thought, of course, Gentile, and then when I hear your name, I think of that really old-timey song, Chantilly Lace, that pretty, and so that's sort of my word association, so when I was thinking of pronouncing it wrong, that song just popped in my head, I'm like, no, it's Gentilly, so thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's tell our listeners a little bit about you, just in case they don't know. So when did you first start playing Magic?
I purchased an intro pack during New Phyrexia, and I started drafting pretty regularly during Innistrad.
Okay. And what would you say is your favorite format?
Definitely limited.
Definitely limited. Okay. Now, what have your experiences been like as a lady Magic player in the scene?
I would say overwhelmingly positive, especially as time goes on. You know, there have been a few incidences where I felt uncomfortable, particularly at GP Orlando last October. But I tend to find that the more people feel comfortable with you, the more the sort of sexist instincts recede.
Mm-hmm. Now, you came to the Magic community's attention back in April. You started a column over at the Brainstorm Brewery blog, and you wrote an article called The Status of Women in Magic, an Optimistic Prognosis. And this was really good.
Thanks.
This was like college level good, which, you know, to be fair, we don't often see in our community. No shade. So what inspired you to write this post? Because it really got a lot of people talking.
So what inspired me to write this post is that there are not very many women playing Magic in Tallahassee. There are two other women who play fairly frequently. You know, it tends to be pretty firmly a boys' club. And there were a couple of negative experiences I had, a lot of microaggressions, subtle tensions that I heard other women that they were also experiencing this in other places. And, you know, as an academic, my first instinct is, let's write it out. And Danny Brown, who was the managing editor of Brainstorm Brewery at the time, is from Tallahassee, and we had been having in our private Facebook group upwards of like 500 long comment Facebook arguments, and he reached out to me and said, why don't we put this in a productive space?
In the 7 months since your article came out, I actually feel a lot has happened. You know, Gabby Spartz has taken off. She's become one of the bigger names. Her article came out and kind of took the web by storm. Our show has certainly taken off, you know, not to toot our own horn. Mm-hmm. You know, do you feel that any progress has been made since your first article came out?
I mean, I definitely do, and this is, you know, very anecdotal. I didn't collect survey data, but when I went to GP Orlando last year, I walked around and I saw maybe 50 women the whole time, you know, and there were, 2,700 people there. And at Atlanta, you know, last weekend, there were women in almost every pod I sat at, women at every table during the main event. So in terms of visibility, I feel really good about that. And the fact that people are just engaging in a dialogue, you know, is really my motivation, because when you make things visible, then they can be confronted when bad things happen.
Yeah, I even saw a Facebook post that went around the Lady Planeswalkers Facebook group from Mark Nestico. He's a pro player for SCG. And he had said that he was even kind of correcting people. Like, you know, he did see more women, but with that came, you know, some really ugly comments. And he was like, you know what? I just felt like saying something. And he finally, you know, started correcting people and started asking people to be better. And I thought that was really great.
Yeah, I've seen that in my own community as well, right? Once you engage in some consciousness raising, then it's on people's radar and they can begin to recognize when inappropriate things are happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Like, I actually feel this has been a pretty good year for us in terms of that subject, and I certainly hope that it keeps going up.
Agreed, and I'm super happy to see Jackie, you know, hopefully they put her up and she can do some more commentating.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. So this has been a pretty busy week. Before we get into the hot topics, let me just start off with our Woman of Excellence. Our Woman of Excellence this week was actually a nomination submitted to us by a listener named Ellen. And Ellen sent us a really lovely email. She said, "Hey, ladies, first, I love the show. I judge with Katie. And when she said that she was going to be on an all-woman podcast, I knew that I was going to have to listen. I was not disappointed. You ladies are doing something so important and something that has inspired me to play more. Thank you so much for that." She says, "I have a woman that I would like to nominate. She is supportive of magic and our community. Her name is Jennifer Kiefer. She's the mother of three boys who all play competitive magic. They were featured at the SCG Open in Dallas. They all made day two, and they are ages 10, 13, and 15. Jennifer is with them at every competition and is so important to the Denver Boulder community. She is everyone's mom. This summer, her and her family spent the whole summer traveling to GPs. Magic is truly a family event for them. Her children are kind and play with great integrity, and this is due to her and her husband's amazing parenting. She wholeheartedly supports the boys and spends most of her weekends cheering them on. She has even filled in as a scorekeeper at pre-releases when needed and is a great example of a woman who may not play magic but is still supportive of our local magic community." That is fantastic.
Absolutely.
Big shout out to her. And our main topic that I want to start off the show with, which actually happened last night, we were just thinking, oh, we have nothing else to talk about. Nothing's going to happen in the next 24 hours. And then, bam, Twitter exploded. Oath of the Gatewatch. Three cards were, quote unquote, leaked last night. The first card that was leaked is Kozilek the Great Distortion. Kozilek costs 8 colorless and has 2 mysterious looking mana symbols next to that 8. We're not really sure what those are, but we can certainly talk about them. Kozilek is a 12/12 with menace and says, when you cast Kozilek the Great Distortion, if you have fewer than 7 cards in hand, draw cards equal to the difference. And he also has discard a card with converted mana cost X to counter target spell with converted mana cost X. Scary stuff.
I think he's the Eldrazi we deserve.
I'm so happy I'm playing Eldrazi Ramp. Like, I'm just like, perfect timing. And so in regards to the weird mana symbols, there were some people speculating that that is a colorless type of mana, that typically with colorless mana as we know it, you can pay for it with any color mana. So like, I'm playing red-green Eldrazi Ramp, and if I want to tap a forest, I can put it towards Ulamog's mana cost, or I can put it towards Ugin's mana cost. But people were speculating that with this new Kozilek, that if there's 2 of that weird symbol, it at least 2 of that has to be colorless mana, that it can't be used, you can't use a specific color to pay for that. Hallie, do you think that that's a decent guess as to what that is?
I think so, especially since there was another spoiler that went along with it.
Yeah, there was a basic land called a Wastes, and it appears to have the same colorless mana symbol, and it just seems to be a colorless basic land. Doesn't seem to be too fancy.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are saying, like, oh, how do you fetch this? This is weird. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, guys, you just use Terramorphic Expanse and Evolving Wild. You fetch it the way you fetch any other basic land, you know. No big deal.
Or you use one of the many ramp spells that I use and just get it that way.
Right? Yeah.
There was also another land spoiled called Mirror Pool. Enters the battlefield tapped. You can tap it to add one of those colorless mana to your mana pool. You can pay 2 and a colorless mana, the new colorless symbol. Sacrifice Mirror Pool, copy target instant or sorcery spell you control. You may choose new targets for the copy. Or you can pay 4 colorless and a new colorless and tap and sacrifice to put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of target creature you control. So if you're already chaining Ulamogs like me, you could essentially make a copy of Ulamog and get some more Ulamog exile triggers. Mm-hmm. I'm in.
Yeah, it looks cool. People were speculating about the waste basic land to determine whether or not that was a berry land or not. We were talking about that at dinner last night. I'm like, what? I'm like, this isn't real. I don't know. I'm not sure.
What is a berry land?
Oh, you never heard about that?
No.
It's basically back when magic first came about and Richard Garfield was designing magic and doing all that stuff. One of his friends, Barry Bitt, I think his last name was Reich, he was able to design some magic mechanics, but they never actually came to fruition. They were supposed to be a part of Invasion, and then later on they decided, okay, well, maybe it's time, and they determined that having the colorless basic was, like, really super broken, or it was going to be a problem, so they kind of scrapped the whole thing. So then a lot of people are speculating now that maybe this is the land that he originally came up with because it was a basic land that taps for colorless mana.
Do you think these cards are real? There hasn't really been any official confirmation yet.
Absolutely. I believe they're real. In August, on Morrow's Tumblr, someone asked him a question about how during Unglued and the Unhinged sets, he spoiled cards by dropping one word at a time. And they asked, have you been doing this in your social media accounts? And his response was, no comment, mirror.
Yep.
So I saw that and I went, yep.
I actually really like this card for the Green Red Eldrazi deck because Hallie and I did a little bit of testing the other day, and you know the Ulamogs and the Hangerbacks are really, really susceptible to Abzan Charm and Crackling Doom. And so I was thinking if we're able to get Kozilek out and Kozilek resolves, a lot of our ramp spells cost 3 mana. So if I have a Nissa's Pilgrimage that I'm not using and Hallie goes to tap out for Abzan Charm, I can discard that Pilgrimage that I'm not using, and because it has a converted mana cost of 3, I could counter her Abzan Charm, and my Kozilek or my Ulamog could stick around a little longer. I think that's really cool.
Agreed. It makes your top deck late game a lot better.
Yeah, because, you know, very often you're top decking, you know, Explosive Vegetation when you already have enough mana, and you're like, well, I guess I'll just make 2 more mana, and sometimes you don't need to do that. I'd rather have the ability to counter something that costs 3, or if I draw a dead Sylvan Scrying, counter something that costs 2, and I'm really, really happy I'm playing that deck right now. So, Chris, are you excited about this? Do you think there might be room in Modern Tron for this?
Yes.
No hesitation.
I really like the concept of this Kozilek card if it is indeed totally legit. I think it looks fun. I mean, I would even play it in Standard, I think. Now I'm all, like, hype. Like, before there was not a lot of hype. Now there's potential hype.
There was also some talk about the fact that the Oath of the Gatewatch pre-release is going to have an emphasis on Two-Headed Giant. I really enjoy Two-Headed Giant. I don't get to do it very much, but there are a lot of people who don't get to experience it very much. So if you all had to, if this is in fact true, you know, what advice do you have for people that may be a little new to that kind of format?
Learn how to communicate very effectively with your partner.
Yes.
That's the one thing I can think of for sure. And try to have a good time.
Yeah, and I would say almost every pre-release in Tallahassee has a Two-Headed Giant offering. So my partner Mike and I play fairly frequently, and I think it's really important to have whoever your Two-Headed Giant partner is be someone who has different strengths than you do. So you're both not displaying the same deficiencies.
Oh, wow. I never thought of that. I think that would also help with deck building too, Haley. Like, let's say you go to build your deck and, like, one of you, you're both aggro players and you're like, well, we don't have enough creatures to go around. One of you has to be the control player. The other has to be the aggro player. How are we going to do this?
Precisely.
That can be tricky too. So while we're on the subject, I know we've joked about this in the past in previous episodes, but did you say that you play Two-Headed Giant with your partner?
Yeah.
And that goes well?
Yeah.
Okay. We've joked about that before, and like sometimes you see those couples that are doing really, really well and you can tell by the way they Two-Headed Giant together, and then there are the ones that just don't do well together and you're like, should I say anything or should I just watch this all melt down?
No, we frequently go undefeated.
Oh, that's fantastic. See, that's the sign of a happy relationship. Like, if you got, I think Hallie made a joke once that like that should be how before when people used to get married, they'd have like the couples counseling with like their pastor.
Yeah.
And we were like, no, you should just do Two-Headed Giant.
Two-Headed Giant. It's a great barometer for relationships.
Oh, Two-Headed Giant is so much easier than being paired up against each other. You know, that's...
Oh, yeah.
Hallie's told some stories about that before.
Oh, yeah.
So much salt.
Oh, man. Oh, really? From your end or his end?
Both, either.
Oh, man. I can relate to that. So GP Atlanta was this past weekend. It was Battle for Zendikar Sealed. The top eight included Tom Martell, Owen Turtenwald, and Sam Black. Tom Martell ended up winning the whole thing. Congratulations to him. There was a lot of talk about Tom's deck in particular because it had a lot of green in it. And over the past week, a lot of pros had kind of gone on record as saying that green was pretty much unplayable. A lot of people had nothing nice to say about green, and yet Tom seemed to do quite well with it. Hallie, I know that you played in a sealed PPTQ this past weekend. Do you agree with that? Like, do you think that green is that bad?
I think it's definitely the weakest color, but I don't think it's as unplayable as people make it out to be. I've definitely won drafts with green decks, though I admit that some green cards are better than others. You know, I like my Snapping Gnarlids, I like my Tajiru War Callers, I like, you know, the Tajiru, what's it called? The Stalwart that has Converge. It's great in a three-color deck. But I admit that, you know, not all green cards are created equal. So if you can sort of load up on those premium green cards or, you know, get some of the key uncommons late because other people don't want them, you can definitely benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was seeing that, and I know I did a draft this past weekend, and one of the judges is a big fan of blue-white control in BFC Sealed, and he said kind of the same thing. He was like, you know, it's not an archetype that I would go after. He's like, but, you know, people just naturally sort of don't pick those cards, so he was like, all right, if you're not going to take these blue-white cards, I'll take them and make a really awesome control deck and sort of, you know, taking those leftovers and turning them into something good.
And I mean, you saw in the first draft of day two, when the coverage focused on Finkel and Jerry Thompson, you notice that towards the end, they just start grabbing green cards because they acknowledge that, you know, if no one's drafting it, there's going to be a really sick green deck at the table that has to be reckoned with.
Yeah, I experienced that problem of, you know, I love black-white allies, and I love the life gain, and, like, you know, it's just one of those really sought-after archetypes, and so I was doing well with the first couple pulls, and then right around the second pack, I was having a really, really hard time getting those cards, and I was like, oh, crap, somebody else is on this too, and, you know, I'm not that good at drafting, so I didn't really know how to switch gears like that, so I was like, well, I'll just try to force it, I guess, and then it's just like, oh, but, you know, there is something really appealing about playing that unwanted archetype.
Yeah, and I think that's a tough thing about this format. I think once you get into a deck, it's really hard to switch because there's so little overlap between strategies. So sometimes you do kind of get stuck sometimes. But the black-white deck, if you're the only one in it, it is really good, I can tell you. But I don't think it supports more than one drafter at a table.
Yeah. Hayley, you were actually at GP Atlanta. What was your experience like?
I had a really great time. I went 3-3 drop, so, you know, not so well in terms of record, but a large group of Tallahassee people went. It was a great community bonding experience. Had the opportunity to meet Patrick Sullivan, who I talked to online occasionally, so it was nice to be able to meet him in person. And I really like this limited format. I think it's a lot of fun. I'm a big fan of Blue White Awaken. So I had a good time, and I was able to get a fair amount of progress on my Jund Modern deck.
Jund and Modern.
Yes.
Yes. Hashtag Jundstice, as I like to say. Big fan of Jund. I actually played Jund for a little while, and I just couldn't make it work in my hands, so I traded away much of the bigger pieces, but still have a great appreciation for it. And I know Brad Nelson started playing Jund recently, and it's not that I wasn't a fan of Brad before, but, like, I became even more of a fan when he picked up Jund. I was like, oh, Bradley, this is good. So I have a great appreciation for Jund. So GP Brussels was also this past weekend. It was standard. There were three copies of Rally the Ancestors, two copies of Esper Dragons, one copy of Atarka Red, one Rattleclaw Abzan, and one regular Abzan. Now, Hallie, I was thinking that with all the Abzan running around, and you guys main deck Anafenza, I was thinking that that would sort of keep the Rally deck in check, and that doesn't seem to be working. So what do you think about all of this?
Frank Carson actually wrote a really great article about this, came out the day that we're recording this show. He interviewed some of the players who were playing Rally. I believe that was Team Eureka, some of the Central Europe or the Northern European pros. And they said that Anavenza isn't really the end of the world for them. Like, sure, sometimes in game one it's difficult, but they have Sidisi's Faithful to exploit itself and bounce it so that they can get in a rally when they need to. Or, you know, post-board they bring in removal and just get rid of Anavenza. So it's not the end of the world, and now I, as an Abzan player, am now going to have to figure out what I do about this matchup and, you know, how I change my sideboard in order to accommodate it, because this deck was not on my radar before this weekend.
Yeah, in the few games that I've played on Magic Online, and I certainly intend to kind of ratchet up my experience, like, I've been playing in the tournament practice room, you and I have played together, Hallie, but I have yet to really do, like, a daily or anything more serious with the deck. The few times I've played against it in tournament practice, it really hasn't been, it's been a race, which is what I expected, but there really hasn't been anything in it where I felt, oh god, I can't beat this.
Yeah, I think one point that some of the pros brought up is that it's a very difficult deck to play, and it's difficult for both players. It's difficult for the person playing it because it's very intricate. It takes a lot of practice in order to figure out exactly what you're doing. And for the people playing against it, it doesn't play the same way as the rally decks from previous standards, so they're not really sure how to combat it. I actually had a friend tell me recently that, you know, he picked up Four Color Rally because he wanted to play it in a PPTQ. He thought it was a good choice, and he ended up winning because his opponents just didn't really know what to do with it.
Yeah. This was another event where Dark Jeskai as a whole didn't seem to do too well. There was one copy in the top 32. Where do you think the deck is going to go from here, and what do you think is causing this downswing?
I hope it goes away. I still don't care for it very much. I had to play it at FNM last week, and I don't know. There's just still something about it that just doesn't feel right. The only thing I could think of is, you know, if these rally decks and, like, having to deal with, like, Esper control and things like that, if they're just able to kind of shut down everything else they have. Because really, I mean, if you're countering Gideon, if you do something about Ojitai, you get rid of some Manus Riders, who cares about Tasker or whatever. It just doesn't really seem, I guess, maybe as threatening, especially if you're playing versus a control deck. For the rally decks, I haven't had to face this yet, so I don't really know what their whole end game is. So I don't know if that's keeping them in check, maybe. But I will not be sad to see Dark Jeskai go and just maybe focus on having a, like, true blue-white control deck or Esper control coming back. That would be cool.
Do you think that maybe the deck is just spread too thin, where it's like, you know, okay, so you're playing a deck with all these colors, it can do all of these things, but, you know, sort of like the problem with a lot of modern control decks is it can't have an answer for everything. And it's like, you know, you've got to worry about the rally decks, you've got to worry about a Tarka Red, and Abzan, and Green Red Ramp, and Esper Dragons, and it just can't. It can't do all those things.
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. I mean, it does have a very good mana base, I'll give it that. Mana in Standard is amazing right now, and I don't think fetching all of its colors is ever that much of a problem for it. I do think, you know, again, as with the rally deck, it does come down to player competency. I think a lot of people are picking up Jeskai just because it's been winning, and it's a very complicated deck to play, and I found that I've had a very difficult time winning against, like, very good Jeskai players who have, like, really put in the reps with their decks, but against some other players who have had less experience, I've just sort of been able to, you know, on turn four, look at their mana and see, okay, they're obviously holding an Ojitai's command, so I'm going to play this Gideon instead of a Rhino, and they just can't really answer it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I was just going to say, I think it's spell bases, you know, obviously coming from a control shell, but then its creature curve is on the lower end of mid-range towards aggro, and it just leads to this uneven play later in the game.
Yeah, I was watching Gabby Spartz's matches in the Super League, and, you know, she was up against them too, and it was like, you know, I think they ran, like, one Tasiger and four Mantis Rider, and if God forbid you deal with any of those things, how are you planning on winning the game? Like, you know, and they definitely had answers where they had Crackling Doom for days, and, you know, main deck Dispel, and Ojitai's Command, and all that good stuff, but you still gotta get me to zero, and I don't think they really, yeah, you can get your Jace Ultimate up there, but they're just very threat dense.
Yeah, I found that, you know, if I just have enough Abzan charms, I could just answer anything that they put down in front of me.
Pretty much. I know when we were testing the other night, she always had Abzan charm. And you mentioned the mana base even, and like, you know, I had never seen her deck before. So when she started fetching for the Sunken Hollows, I was like, is she on Dark Jeskai? And did she fib me? What's going on here?
No. Nope.
And then when we had a couple of matches, I was like, so I gotta ask you, like, is the blue for anything? And you're like, nope, just because I can.
Nope. And I'm just like, just so my Flooded Strands can fetch all three colors.
I was expecting some like main deck dispels or something spicy, and nope, it was just Abzan with Sunken Hollows. And
speaking of spicy, did you see that Rattleclaw Abzan deck was playing an Exert influence?
What?
Yeah, that yes, is pretty cool.
I saw that and I was like, yes, so splashy. I love it.
I am not mad about that. Mm-hmm. Man. So there were some big event changes happening on Magic Online. The first announcement came about, or was dealing with the Mox changes, which is an event that I tried to qualify for, and then I kind of stopped after these changes were announced because I felt like the changes were a little better for the system. There's a lot going on here, so I'll try to keep it brief. The main point of this is that the qualifier points can now be saved up. Currently, they have seasons, which last for about a month, and any points that you earn in that month are only good for that month. So let's say I was going for my goal of Mox this month and I only earned 9 points. At the end of this month, those 9 points are null and void. With the new system coming up, you'll just have them, and you can bank them. And so let's say you don't make your goal of that month, but you do accumulate enough points a few months down the line, you can then say, oh, hey, I have enough points now, and then use it for a future event, which I think is really cool. With that, though, they have increased the cost of these events. It now costs, it's 15 points now. It's going to be 35 when the new system kicks in. So a little bit more of a grind, but again, you're not actually losing those points. You can save them throughout the year, which I think is really cool. They also changed the system for how the Mox is going to work. So you earn your 35 points, and that buys you a seat into the monthly qualifier. The top 4 people of each monthly qualifier will then earn a seat to the quarterly playoffs, which will happen 4 times a year, a week after each Pro Tour. 2 finalists from each quarterly playoff will then go on to the Magic Online Championship, along with the defending Mox Champion, the Magic World Champion, and then players from the Mox Leaderboard. And if you win that, you get an invite to next year's championship, an invite to the next World Magic Championship, and platinum status in the Pro Players Club.
That all sounds fantastic.
So you just win that, and you're a platinum pro.
Yeah. Simple enough.
That is. If you're already a Platinum Pro or a Gold Level Pro or a Hall of Famer, you are automatically invited to each monthly event. Platinum Pros are invited to every playoff event. And Silver Pros, including our friend Autumn Burkett.
Yay.
Very proud of her. Except Hall of Famers will receive 15 points during downtime before each monthly event, which they can bank and save up for the monthly qualifiers. There was a lot of talk about this. Like, there were some people who felt like inviting a bunch of pros to these things was a little damaging or could be problematic. Haley, what do you think about that?
I think it's an attempt to legitimize MTGO. You know, especially in the context of how frequently you watch pro streamers and they get extremely frustrated and end up, you know, quitting and disparaging MTGO. So I think it's an attempt to try and merge two segments of the community that can sometimes have a gulf between them.
And Hallie, do you think that there's an incentive for them to take part in this?
Absolutely. I don't see why not. I mean, if you want to earn platinum, absolutely go for it. I don't see any reason not to. I mean, I know some people have been very critical of Magic Online. I'm not necessarily in those players' shoes, so I don't know what incentives they would need to continue using it. But I think that's enough incentive for me.
Mm-hmm. And do you think there's any merit to the people who were concerned about the fact that it's going to be, you know, overwhelmingly these really good players? You know, let's say you're somebody like me, and you go to save up for your monthly event, and you go, and all of a sudden, you know, you're playing a 5-round event, and it's like Paul Rietzel round 1, LSV round 2, Martin Muller round 3, Shahar round 4, and you're like, holy shit. Like, do you think that could be a problem?
I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a problem. I think if you want to earn that kind of spot, I mean, you're qualifying for, you're supposed to be the Magic Online champion and you're qualifying for Worlds and getting platinum. I mean, I think you should have to face a lot of stiff competition in order to get there.
Okay, so it's something you would look, I think you'd look forward to that challenge.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. There were also some changes involving the Magic Online PPTQs. So for going forward, you're going to receive a token, which you can use to buy entry into a PTQ finals event. This token is good for any finals that you are eligible for in that Pro Tour season, plus all of the next qualification season. I think the way that it is right now, there isn't a lot of time in between you earning your spot and then the final happening.
Yeah, it's like a day.
Yeah. Are you serious?
Yeah. So you can play from Wednesday to Saturday, and then or you can play either from Wednesday to Friday or Wednesday to Saturday, and then depending on when the last PPTQ is, the final is Saturday or Sunday.
Jesus.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to having more downtime to practice before actually going to a final.
Yeah, they also said that the PTQ preliminary events are going to be held on weekends as well.
Nice.
Which I think is nice, because every time I look at that schedule, it's like 4 on Thursday, 4 on Friday, and it's like, I have a day job. Like, I can't, like, I'd really love to participate in these things, but I just don't have the freedom to do that during the week. So having more events for weekend warriors like me, I think is going to be nice. There was also a change where the tokens that you earn in these PPTQs are only good for a similar type of event. So if you earned your token in a sealed PPTQ, you can only buy entry into another sealed PPTQ. You can't use it to buy entry into a constructed one like standard or modern, and vice versa. If you earned your token in a constructed event, you can't buy entry into a sealed event. Is it like that now, Hallie?
I actually don't know. I would have to look into that. I've never actually played in them. I've considered it many times, but I've also, like you, had a hard time fitting it into my schedule. I'm not actually sure, but I think that's a fine change. A lot of people either specialize in, I mean, even though a lot of people try to play both these days, I mean, I'm definitely one of those people. Most people have a specialty, constructed or limited. I definitely prefer limited. Or, you know, in a certain season, people will feel more comfortable with a limited format or with a standard format. So consistency is always good.
Yeah, it sounds like these are really good changes overall. So, speaking of getting better and progress, Hallie, you wrote a Tumblr post the other day, which I thought was really, really good, and you talked about, it's called Fearless Magic Inventory, so why don't you tell people about it and some of the points that you brought up?
Sure. So the idea of a Fearless Magic Inventory was coined by Sam Stoddard, who currently works in R&D, but was once a magic grinder. And about 8 years ago, I think, he wrote this post for Star City Games called Creating a Fearless Magical Inventory, which was basically where he made a list of what he felt some of his weaknesses were, some things that he needed to work on, and he just put it online and he made it public so that he could essentially be held accountable for them, and so he could, you know, get things off his chest. And I thought, you know, I made a list to myself, and I thought, you know, I care a lot about helping other people improve, and it's not necessarily that I need other people to hold me accountable, but it's more that I think this is a good idea. I think that occasionally taking an inventory of where you need to improve is a good idea, and I want to encourage other people to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Chris, if you were to make an inventory like this, you know, what are some things that you think you might include on it if you had to?
Oh, God. When I was going through Hallie's list, I was like, I agree with a lot of them. I was actually just thinking to myself that I really need to devote more time to trying to playtest more often before events. Because I'll be like, oh, yeah, we're going to go to this event. It's going to be so cool. And then I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, I barely played this deck. And so I need to try to devote more time to practicing before events. I'm trying to think. Don't really have a problem with tilting or anything like that. I don't really teach many people how to play very often, so I don't really have that issue. I don't know, but I definitely think I need to spend more time focusing on magic than I have been doing other things. And so I'm thinking that I'm going to try to take one day during the week where I try to focus on magic and practicing or doing like deck brewing or something, because I mean, I started doing that a lot at work and it kind of led into some new decks that I've been working and playing with, and actually have been feeling a lot better about Magic than I did in probably the last 2 months. So it's been really good.
Haley, what would you put on your list if you did something like this?
So I really, really enjoyed your Tumblr post, Holly, because that was a conversation that I had started having with some people in my local community that I respect as, you know, better players than me following GP Atlanta. And one thing that really motivated me to begin aggressively building Jund rather than just slowly picking up pieces here and there, which I've been doing for the last couple of months, is that I really want to dive into a constructed format and stick with it because, like I said, I love limited. I particularly love drafting. But I noticed I was spending a lot of time devoted towards Magic, like watching LSV draft, right? Or watching Paul Cheon draft, which is fun and great in terms of like learning card evaluation and picking up on things in the current standard format that you're not familiar with or didn't think of. But it's not building analytic skills, right? It's not teaching you lines of play. It's not teaching you familiarity with the meta. So for me, it's I just would really like to devote myself to learning Modern as a format and not just like occasionally watching a video about it and not paying attention to what the possible lines of play are. And I really need to work on anticipation. anticipating what your opponent's going to play is pretty key to Magic. So that particularly. And then also just taking notes and revisiting them. I'm a very visual learner, and I find if I'm not devoting time to sitting down and like writing out sideboard strategies, it's not something that's going to stick with me. So taking the time to do that and not just going, well, we've talked about it once, it'll be fine, I'll remember it. Clearly that's not working out.
Yeah, I related to several of your points, Hallie. The one that I'm particularly guilty of is the being surprised by what people have in their deck, where you not only do you have to get better at anticipating what's in a major archetype, but not being surprised when people have like that spicy meatball where, like, you know, you think you know an archetype so well. Like, I was playing against somebody the other day at Chris's FNM who, you know, I thought he was just on Grixis Twin, and come to find out he had no Pestermites. And I was like, I'm waiting for the combo. Like, I'm thinking, I'm done. And then all of a sudden, he's firing off Inquisitions and, like, multiple Kolaghan's commands. And I'm like, where do you even have room for the combo at this point? Like, you're stacked up on so much discard. Where are your Pestermites? And he's like, I don't even run any. And I'm like, oh, no. And so that made it really difficult, like, you know, for me to, you know, anticipate how to beat him. And I'll admit I got a little frustrated. I was like, you know, why would you dilute such a finely, you know, tuned engine for the sake of this? And that's something I have to get used to, is that not everybody's going to be playing stock lists, and that, you know, there may be that one of, or they may deviate from the strategy, and being able to adapt to that instead of letting that knock me down. Like, why is this happening? Okay, it's happening. What are you going to do about it? That's something I have to work on.
Yeah, I've already started working on that. Yesterday, when I was playing Magic yesterday, and I played against a Dark Jeskai list, and my opponent Jeskai charmed my Hangarback Walker to the top of my library, and I was just like, Jeskai charm, like, this, I haven't seen Jeskai charm out of this deck before. Like, usually just the regular three color Jeskai deck, like Ryochi Tamada's version of the deck plays Jeskai charm. I was like, huh, haven't seen that in a while. And so I just started, instead of, you know, freaking out about it and being like, oh my god, did I not study the deck list properly, am I forgetting something, I just like took out a piece of paper and I started writing notes, like, okay, Jeskai charm, that means if they have Jeskai charm, they don't have something else, maybe they don't have Kolaghan's command. So I started just like taking notes and thinking, like, okay, so if they have this, first of all, in games 2 and 3, I have to play around this. And second of all, there's something that they must not have instead. So I started deducing what they could not have, and it was actually a really good exercise for me.
Very cool. Listener question this week. Be sure to send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. This letter is from Kat, and Kat says, "Hi, girls. First of all, I'd like to thank you. The motley crew that meets up every week makes for an insightful and surprisingly hilarious show, especially when the conversations veer off track. I've recently read an old thread on a controversial card called Triumph of Ferocity. As, girl, Haley's ready. As you may know, the original artwork featured Liliana and Garrick in a slugfest, with Liliana getting victimized for her dark dealings in a somewhat inviting pose. The artwork fit the lore perfectly, but was criticized heavily for depicting a woman in compromising fashion, even going as far as to alluding to rape. The image was subsequently changed in Duels of the Planeswalker. My question is this: what do you think about the role of the story and artwork on marketing and attracting new women players in general? I would love a pony themed world for the next set, but somehow I doubt that would garner much push from Wizards. Thanks."
I personally have no problem with that particular artwork, really. I know that some people do. It's never bothered me. In relation to marketing for women, I'll be honest. I am definitely not of Orthos, because sometimes, like, years after, like, the cards come out, I'll look at the art and be like, oh, shit, that's what that was that whole time? Like, I didn't even pay attention close enough to realize what it was, because I'm so focused on the text on the cards. So I focus, I guess, less on the art and more on what the card does. Maybe that's silly, but that's just me. But I don't want to censor art, because then I feel like we start walking down, like, a dangerous path. I definitely want people to feel open to their interpretations of things and express themselves in the ways that they want to. Because I'm very against censorship. But this particular art doesn't bother me. I haven't seen anything on any Magic cards that I was like, that's a little out there, or that bothers me in any way. So I don't know about marketing to women specifically. Again, I'll say something I've said before. I think every woman has to gauge for themselves something that makes them feel uncomfortable or something that they're just not into. Me personally, like I said, this one doesn't particularly bother me, and I haven't seen anything that I think would dissuade me from playing the game. That's my two cents.
Yeah, Chris, you should not feel silly for not paying attention to card art, because I am the exact same way. I'm also the kind of person where someone will tell me, like, oh, did you notice that Den Protector has a baby on her hip? And I was just like, wait, she did? I didn't notice that. And it took me, you know, looking back at the card and being like, oh my god, she does have a baby. That's awesome. I've seen the Triumph of Ferocity art. I'm not too keen on it, but it's not the kind of thing that would necessarily, like, dissuade me from playing the game or put me off that much. However, I realize that that other people don't feel that way, and some other people do care a lot about, representation in card art and representation in the Magic storyline. And I am really glad to see that Wizards has kind of been doubling down on equal representation for various groups, like, in art. I appreciated that, you know, there are so many more women in the Khan storyline. I appreciated that there were so many people of color in the Theros storyline. We've seen, you know, all kinds of different strides made in terms of increasing representation, and I hope that it just continues to get better from here.
I would say I don't think that the Triumph of Ferocity art, or I guess my opposition to the Triumph of Ferocity art, doesn't come from a place of presuming that it would turn women off from the game, right? Like, we're all women who play Magic. We all have diverse interests and motivations for being involved in this community, and I highly doubt there's, like, a woman out there who's like, that one card art, I'm donezo. Like, that's it. You know? Like, it's a great, rich game. I think, in my opinion, I'm sure many people's opinion, it's the greatest game ever designed. I think it's more about setting a tone, right? And being tuned in to who your potential audience is, and the fact that Wizards changed it, to me, signals that they're perceptive of that. But in terms of artwork in general, I don't know that there are too many people who are drawn into Magic, men or women or non-binary or otherwise, right? But I will say I do know a couple of women kitchen table players who are very interested in story. And I don't know very many men who follow along that Vorthos line, just personally. But I agree. For me, it's not about the artwork unless it's a really sick foil. I have a penchant for foils.
I actually think that story can be very inviting. You know, it meant a lot to me as a trans person to see Alesha be revealed. You know, I play games to make that connection with people and to, you know, I enjoy being able to look at a character and relate to that character. And so, you know, to see a game that I love and have loved for a really long time, you know, create a character like me, I mean, that meant more than I can even express. Like, that was a really, really big deal for me. And I know people who feel that way, and I feel like, you know, there should be. Like, I feel like there should be characters that a woman can look at and say, you know, there isn't just the damsel character, there isn't just the seductress character, there isn't just the hothead character. You know, I really think that, you know, it is necessary for there to be different archetypes that people can relate to. I actually defended the Triumph of Ferocity art when the kerfuffle first happened on my World of Warcraft blog. And through the years, my stance on that has changed quite a bit. Like, on the one hand, it's like when I tilt my head to the left, it doesn't seem so bad. But when I tilt my head to the right, kind of like you're looking at a painting at a gallery, I keep coming back to the idea that there are so many other ways that they could have drawn that. Where, why do her legs have to be slightly open? Why does he have to be standing in between them? Why does the size difference between them have to be so stark to where Liliana looks like a waif when we know that she's not a waif? You know, I just think of all the ways that you could have expressed it without having to go there. And so, you know, it didn't really bother me personally, but when I think of, like I said, all of the other ways that the art direction could have been handled, or that you could describe something like ferocity, I just don't understand how that was the only thing that came to mind, where there were so many other ways that that could have been done, and ultimately that's what they decided upon. I just thought that was very disappointing. And so, you know, I wasn't, and looking back on it now, I understand why Wizards replied the way that they did. But if you asked me back then, I was, you know, totally upset that anybody would even question this, and why would you cave to context? And I was very much on my platform at the time, and I've come to kind of understand now what happened.
Yeah, honestly, I think some of the player backlash to the change is more disturbing than the card art itself. particularly, I mentioned this in one of the articles I wrote, and I had lots of angry emails of, Liliana is sexualized, you know, her character is sexualized, and that to me is disturbing because her sensuality being part and parcel of her characterization, that's conflating sexual violence with her being self-possessed, right? So, like, just because she is a sensual character doesn't mean, or because that's part of her character, doesn't then make it okay. Like, that doesn't need to be turned against her. And so I guess some of the things I heard people saying along that lines was frightening to me.
Yeah, that's a little scary to think about. So, anything else you want to talk about before we wrap up the show?
I wanted to give a shout out to my friend Brian Rowe, who operates a magic vlog called Mythic MTG Tech on YouTube. He interviewed me for his vlog recently, and I just wanted to make everyone aware of it. He does these really great short videos about different subjects. Sometimes he does deck tech, sometimes he does financial analyses of different sets, but he always puts out really great content, so I would suggest that everyone check him out.
Yeah, I saw that. That turned out really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brian's a really great guy. He's, I call him the mayor of Seattle Magic because he's really invested in building community and educating other players. So I really just want to promote his work. I think he does great work.
Very cool. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, where can they find you and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalcanSan. That's HalcanSan. If you want to read the Tumblr post that we talked about earlier, my Tumblr is magicandrealism@tumblr.com. I'm also going to be writing a brief tournament report about the PPTQ that I played in earlier this week, which I top fored. And so you can check that out there too. And you can also find my writing here on gatheringmagic.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is @THKRIZ. That's @Chris. My Gmail is YOTHKRIZ. That's YOTHKRIZ. And my Snapchat is Cryptic Command with K's.
Should I go ahead?
Sorry. Yeah.
Sorry. So, apologies.
Unless you don't want people to find
no,
you.
No, apologies. So, my, you can, like I said, I'm Haley Gentile. You can find me on Twitter at Haley Jo Gentile. That's HaleyJoGentile. I don't want any of you nerds looking at my Tumblr. and if you're interested in my sociological work, you can also find me on Twitter, and we could chat about that, too.
Are you planning on writing for Brainstorm Brewery again? Because your work was really good.
Thanks. Honestly, it was very emotionally exhausting. I received, to this day, I continue to receive email notifications of comments with terrible things in them. So I really want to focus on, like I said, really solidifying my Jund game, and hopefully get some solid wins under my belt, and then maybe be able to stream or write about Magic from that perspective. But also, you know, because I'm an academic, what I do for a living is write. So it's also a little exhausting to do that in my free time recreationally, too.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That's OriginalOestrus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket, and you can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Haley, thank you so much for joining us. It has certainly been a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be able to converse with other women in magic.
Yeah, hopefully we get a chance to meet you sometime. If we're ever at an event, we should coordinate.
That would be great. I'm aiming to go to GP Charlotte in May.
That's what I'm hoping for as well.
Oh, let's make it happen.
You'll have to teach me how to do your eyebrows. So jealous, man. And everybody, thank you so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.